All right, y'all go ahead and mark your calendars. Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th is the Mobile Hunters Expo in Dalton, Georgia. Y'all have heard us talking about it for years, and it really is. It's the highlight of our summer. We absolutely love that show. We've met so many of you guys at that show over the years, and it is just it's like the perfect environment to go and meet like-minded hunters, hang out, have a good time, and get ready for deer season. So obviously, as the name implies, it is the place to go and try all of the mobile hunting gear coming out right now. We always recommend to people, if you're thinking about getting a new stand, a new sticks, a new saddle, go try it before you buy it. The Mobile Hunters Expo let you try almost all the brands in the mobile hunting space in one spot in one day. There's really nothing like it. So not only do you have all that gear available to you, they also have a great speaker lineup. This year they've got Bobby Worthington, Dylan Harper, Mariah Boggess, Derek Norwood, and BHA all giving presentations where you can go learn from those guys and ask them questions. So if you've heard us talk about the Mobile Hunters Expo for a couple years now and haven't made it out yet, don't let this be another year that you miss it. Y'all come on out. We'll have a great time. We're excited to meet you guys there. We can't wait for it. We'll see y'all there. Again, mark y'all's calendars. It's at the Dalton Convention Center in Dalton, Georgia, Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th. See y'all there. All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck, and I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic, and no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find bachelor groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes, or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com. Welcome back, everybody, to another Thursday Q&A edition of the podcast. We got a couple of video Q&As that we're hitting today, as well as some hot takes from our Circle community. By the way, we're back on YouTube, everybody. So last Thursday's episode is audio only because we couldn't post for a week. Jacob, how you doing?
I'm doing good. It was great to be back on YouTube.
So took a little involuntary hiatus.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, ejected from the platform for a week, but we're back. We got everything worked out.
We're back and better than ever, baby.
Should be good. Should be good to go. But anyways, appreciate everybody watching the podcast and call for listening to probably hopefully this Monday's episode and also last week's episode with a little bit of hiatus. We had a couple really good episodes come out last week with Dylan Harper from North Georgia, and then this week's episode with Lindsey Thomas Jr. from NDA, National Deer Association, which a really interesting episode. We'll maybe talk a little bit more about that. And I know we're going to talk a ton about it on the Circle Hunters Hangout meeting that we're doing tonight. But kick it on over. We got some live Q&As. We got some video Q&As. Appreciate everybody that submitted some questions on our website and submitted some videos. Really enjoy answering them. So what we got?
What's up, fellas? Just checking in here. I attached a picture with this one. Pretty crazy impact from a tornado we had just come through Indiana, and you can kind of see the results in the picture there. When taking a look at that picture and seeing how it ripped through some public land that, you know, we have access to hunt, what would be your strategy for pregame scouting and potentially hunting a crazy impacted area? Appreciate it. Stay southern.
All right, Jacob, what do you think?
We have personal experience hunting this kind of stuff. So the first year, which I'm wondering when that tornado went through, he sent some photos, some drone photos of it.
That is crazy.
Is there any kind of green understory? I'm not sitting close enough.
No, I mean, it's just all the tops. I mean, it's like a fresh tornado path. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just a bunch of dead timber.
Yeah, this year, depending on how much growth happens, understory growth, I'm sure deer will still use it, but especially for the next, if they don't come through and really clear it up, they might, you know, depending on what kind of public land it was on, if it was on federal ground, they might try to come through and cut it up and haul some of that stuff out.
Yeah.
It's going to be unbelievably thick to the point that you don't think you can navigate it, but deer will use it. And we've had experience hunting this kind of stuff, and it is phenomenal. And one of our past guests, Wes Moe, he's been hunting stuff like this for 40 years. Including one specific site for 40 years, mm-hmm. and it's killed I don't know how many bucks. Him and, you know, the group of the Wolfpack guys, how many bucks they've killed in cover like that. So, one thing Wes talked about specifically for scouting cover like that, again, tornado pass, storm damage, even clear cuts to a certain degree, is just walking it, looking for exit routes. You know, trails going in and out of that cover. And he mentioned a lot of times it's wherever there's a drainage, depending on, it looks like that one is kind of going all over from the tops to down the bottoms. Like it's got everything cut, got everything blown over. But specifically when you have, if it's down low or even up high, where there's a drainage going in or out of that cover is probably where you're going to find some of that, those access trails. And those are some of those spots that you really want to pay attention to. Also, it's a great spot. What was his name again? I didn't catch his name.
James.
This is a great time for you and some buddies to get together, build your little wolf pack, and that would be something awesome to hunt with 8 or 9 buddies. You do it with bow season. Really, it'd be a lot better during gun season. And to spread out on both sides of that cut, or both sides of that tornado damage, up and down for 1,000 yards. Everybody get 300 yards from each other on different exit routes and see what y'all kill. But no, dude, that's going to be, it's terrible now because I'm sure navigating, like you're not going to walk through that. You can't walk through that, but you'd be surprised how the deer use it. And then all that new growth come up, you're going to have tons of browse, phenomenal cover during the rut. Bucks and does are going to pile down into that stuff. Bucks are going to cruise the edge of it. So it could be, it'd be really, really good for you. You got to look for those trails coming in and out of it. And any cover, one thing Wes talked about is any cover that's not necessarily storm damage, but vegetation cover that comes off of the storm damage that goes up in elevation or just leads away from it. Those are going to be hot spots of travel. Again, travel going in and out of that cover, the storm damage, but also even navigating just through that across, you know, paralleling that cover. So something to think about, but it looks rough, but it could be really good over the next 10, 15 years for you.
Yeah, definitely. And not just to add to that, I mean, for practical, like boots on the ground, what you can do right now is you might already be doing this, but if you're not, I would go in and just walk the edges of it. Kind of like you're saying, if you got a buddy who's going to hunt it with you, one of y'all get on one side of it, one of you get on the other side, and just start walking those edges. And you might find some thin spots in the damage where, you know, sometimes a tornado, we're very familiar with tornadoes down here in the South because they happen all the time. Sometimes it'll weaken or something will happen where it just does not kill the timber in one spot like it does in other areas. Like in some areas, it'll flatten everything, completely flatten it. But then it might, you know, over the next hill, it might have blown down like 50% of the timber there. There might still be some trees standing in it. It might have ripped up some root balls where you've got trees that are still living that will continue to live, like oak trees. We got this coming up on a future episode that we recorded on this past trip we just did, where we talked about damage from Helene, Hurricane Helene, that went through Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, and how some of those big 100-year oak trees that it blew over still have enough root ball in the ground that they're alive, and they're laid over at ground level, and they're producing acorns at ground level that the deer can just go pick off the tree. So things like that, going and finding, locating areas like that, and just keep up with it. You know, like this year it might not be the best hunting, but it's going to come into its prime. If you're in Indiana, it's probably a little bit slower than down here because you are further north. But
3 years.
3 to 5 years, it's going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. So I would be, you know, tornadoes are never great, but I'd be a little bit excited about hunting around that thing.
Especially because it looks like it's big woods.
Yeah.
So if it's big woods and there's no more, or they're not doing a lot of logging activity, that's going to be some of the best browse in the area all adjacent to it. And because of how, depending on how it's oriented, which most tornado paths are going to kind of, they're going to run west to east, either like west to east, northwest to southeast, southwest, northeast. And depending on how it's oriented, you're going to have a lot of, you're going to have a lot of vegetation growth on the edge of that tornado path, protruding into the woods, a lot of vegetation growth. And again, from a cover standpoint, from a browse standpoint, it's going to be a hot spot for a lot of activity. So
yeah, definitely.
Be in the juice.
Well, also on that note, when you open up the canopy like that, the edges of that tornado path are going to get thicker, so it's going to create like a soft edge, which those oaks on the edge might produce even better now. And so you might get into some situations where you can find oaks that are really, really dropping on the edge of really, really thick cover, might make some good early season spots in the next couple years. So yeah, just I would just walk it, kind of find an area that looks good to you where you're finding sign, and just keep up with it. Keep hunting it over the next couple of years and start building history, because that goes back to what Wes does. Mm-hmm. Just learn that area and learn how they use it. And back when we used to rabbit hunt around some of the same tornado paths when I was a kid that Wes was hunting. I didn't know Wes back then, but we used to rabbit hunt around them, and you would find big scrape lines running down the edges of those things. And every once in a while, in one of those thin spots, you'd find a big giant trail going into that thing. Because there's some places where they can't get into it. It's literally like a wall. And so that almost creates little micro funnels all up and down the edges of that thing. So just walk it. And that stuff you can really only find boots on the ground, just walking through the thicket.
Mm.
So interesting question. All right, next up we got, he put his name as his tag, AL Bow Hunter. The subject is population question. And he wrote this one in via text. Can a property become an immature buck factory? I have a 300-acre property with excellent habitat, very low buck harvest, about one buck per year, and we never harvest does. The interesting part is we don't actually see many does either. Every year we have an abundance of 1.5 to 3.5-year-old bucks, but very few mature bucks, 5-plus years old, and relatively few doe sightings. Is it possible that a high density of subordinate bucks creates a social dynamic where mature bucks avoid spending significant time on the property? Or is it more likely the explanation is that mature bucks and doe family groups have established core areas elsewhere? If the goal is to consistently hold more 5-plus-year-old bucks, would selectively harvesting younger bucks ever be a legitimate management strategy? What say you, Mr. Meyer?
I have no biology degree on this, but we talked a bunch of them. My thing is he doesn't talk about the property, but I would assume there's something going on with the habitat that doesn't, for whatever reason, it's not selectable for use of mature deer.
Right.
And even does.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's, I mean, a young buck, I mean, he's a wanderer, especially at 1.5, 2.5 years old. To me, there's something probably going on with the habitat that's keeping from that property really being used much by mature deer. Other flip side, it could be if you're not killing that, you're only killing like on average one buck a year out there. Maybe your neighbors have something to do with it. Maybe. I doubt it though. Because, I mean, he's in Alabama. I mean, Alabama, yeah, we can kill three bucks a person. You get three buck tags. It's not a physical tag, but you can kill $3. I don't think that would necessarily be the case. I think for sure it's probably habitat. So
yep.
If it's he doesn't specify, is it a lease, if he owns the property or anything like that? Is it a...
He says excellent habitat, but I'm curious what excellent habitat might mean to him.
Yeah.
Versus
AL bow hunter, please write back in with more context. That'd be really interesting.
Yeah.
Is
it 300 acres of just standing timber with no thickets in it? Is it,
yeah,
but thickets?
Is it a 12-year-old pine stand, 15-year-old pine stand that hasn't been thinned yet?
Do you have water on the property?
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like it's a habitat. But I feel like I've had... I'm trying to think. What's up?
Because 300 acres is a pretty good chunk.
Yeah, that's a good chunk. I'm trying to think from personal experiences with maybe my uncles, if I remember anything like that coming up.
To me, this kind of reminds me of my old club a little bit.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, I think we did... the vast majority of the good deer on the property were 3.5-year-old bucks. We just did not have a great population of older bucks, even on the new club. I don't know how many of those bucks I got on camera on the new club are 5-plus years old. Maybe one or two of them. I think most of them are 3.5 and 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, I think it could be something to do with just your neighbors. Like, if in your neighborhood people are just hammering the bucks, then they're like, yeah, you probably don't have many 5-plus-year-old bucks. There's not that many deer that live that long, you know? So, it could be.
You say that, but I forgot what biologist we had on that talked about this, but it's like every year a deer gets older, there's less and less of that age class because there's everything, like they can die from all kinds of stuff,
yep.
Okay? So, for them to make it to, say, 5 years old or 4 years old, there's a lot of things going against them outside of just even hunting pressure that can keep them from
getting... They get hit by a car. They get sick.
Yeah.
They can get an illness and die.
Yeah, that can keep them... Or, I mean, a brain abscess could kill them.
Yeah.
Fighting and damaging a pedicle. That's a really good... That's a question. So, going back, like, if he should shoot younger bucks, I'd say probably no. I mean, I don't think... That's not the problem. I don't think they're running those mature bucks out of there. It's not like a gang of Jakes. Turkeys run off a gobbler or something like that. But that would be an interesting conversation to have maybe with another biologist about a situation like that and potentially, but we need more context. Alabama bow, AL bow hunter.
Yeah, what part of Alabama?
What part of Alabama?
Because is it truly like a low deer density area?
What is the habitat? If you can send us aerial photos of the property, we don't have to share that on the podcast, but just for context. So if we talk to a biologist on, we can show them what it looks like. That would be extremely helpful. And especially because he's saying he's not seeing very many does. I feel like that's interesting. He said it's a low deer number.
No, I'm just saying, I wonder if it's a low, like one of those parts of Alabama that's just lower numbers in general. Because if you're not even seeing that many does, to me, that says either you just don't have that many deer, it's low deer density, or there is something missing from the property where it's just not holding
deer. Might be food too.
Yeah, it might be food. That's why I asked if it's like a closed canopy forest, whether it's pines or hardwoods.
And food's not just corn piles. Yeah, you probably could hold a doe group somewhere if you had enough corn sitting out there.
Yeah.
But native browse would be the big one. But yeah, we just need more context. Give us more context, and this would be a great question to kind of do a follow-up on.
Yeah, I would love to get some more context on this question and re-answer it at some point. So with that, let's move over to the circle. You got that post pulled up?
I do.
Because I do not. So I'll let you take the first one while I go find it. All
right, so we asked our circle community, which y'all have heard us talking about over the last month or so.
Holy moly, it's got 53 comments.
Circle community, this is what we moved to, moving away from Patreon, and it's been awesome, super interactive. A lot of our members are making some interesting posts, but Andrew put a post up. As for, again, questions and also hot takes for this podcast, this first cover, this is an interesting one where I can't talk. Interesting one right off the rip. Jake Hollinsworth from Mississippi has got a hot take, and his hot take, and he starts it with a phrase saying, because he's dealt with this, sliding optics or bow sights are overkill for 99% of bow hunters, and you can save yourself hundreds of dollars by sticking to a 3-pin.
Agree.
I agree. You know, for somebody, if you, I mean, you can even get a fixed 5 or 7 pin if you want to shoot distance with it. I've shot movable sights and I've shot fixed pins. Personally, for me, I'm not a great bow hunter, but I like the simplicity of a fixed pin sight.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to go a bunch of different shooting competitions, all that kind of stuff, if you want to practice extended ranges, 60, 70 plus yards, just to make those 40-yard shots a lot easier, a movable pin sight's great. But again, typically they're a lot more expensive. And it seems like you kind of get what you pay for typically with a bow sight.
Mm-hmm.
If you get like a more economical, adjustable slider sight, they're not nearly as durable. You get a lot more plastic components. It's not like aluminum or anything like that. And durability, like if you like happen to drop your bow or something, or like you're pulling it up on your bowstring and something happens, there's a good chance you could damage it. And that's kind of where I feel like you're paying for in that space. And there's just so many moving components up there. I mean, they're just expensive. They really are.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think for any new bow hunter, just someone who's like simply, like, hey, I'm not shooting past 30, 40 yards, even 50 yards, you know, a simple fixed pin sight could be phenomenal for that.
Yeah, totally agree with everything you just said. Because I originally went to a slider pin sight, and the reason I did it is so I could practice at longer ranges and also not having like a 5-pin. Because I think at one point I was shooting like a 5-pin sight,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't like how busy it was. And so then I switched to a 3-pin, and the bottom pin floats up and down. And I like it for that. I have never touched it in a hunting situation. I only touch it when I am practicing out to distance, which I don't do very much. I should probably do more. I completely agree with that. All right. This is from Mike Springstead. Hot take. I've heard a lot about trail cams recently getting a lot of hate because they give you preconceived ideas about the deer that you see on camera. If used properly and you don't over-rely on them, they 100% can help you put a good buck on the ground. Agree.
Please. Yeah. I don't feel like that's a hot take, but yeah, I think you can get really tore it with trail cameras and what's on camera and what's not on camera to keep you from hunting or keeping you over-hunting something. That's not worth it. So yeah, I don't think that's all that controversial, but that's a really good point.
The next one's controversial. Austin Lowry.
Oh yeah, Austin Lowry. Hot take. Make deer movement natural again. Get rid of baiting.
What do you think?
I mean, it's kind of a hot take in certain areas in the bait state. Like, we're in a bait state on private land. I've heard that argument from a lot of people, and I partly agree. I'm of the mindset, if you rely solely on baiting, you don't really build a lot of woodsmanship, especially now with cell cameras. Don't like find an area that looks good, put corn out wherever you can get a stand location in. You dump corn, put a cell camera on, and you wait until a deer is somewhat patternable, and you go in there and shoot the deer. It's legal. If that what gets you excited, by all means, keep doing it. But from a woodsmanship standpoint and experiencing a little bit more of like Austin mentioned, natural deer movement. I feel like you miss out on a lot of that kind of stuff. So, but I've also, again, we've met guys who kind of use it as a tool, whether it's just for cameras or for hunting or like a kind of a focal point, and then they're kind of hunting out from that central area.
Mm-hmm.
Again, to each their own, but we've also had guys on like Mike Rex, who was a couple weeks ago's episode. He was talking about, because I keep forgetting what their commission is or their board that he sits on for Ohio State.
Yep.
Or you know, the state of Ohio. They're game and fish. But he was talking about like the removal, because I asked him about baiting or something. We talked about baiting. He's like, if you remove baiting from Ohio, it's been here for so long, there'd be a lot of people that would stop hunting due to the fact that that's the only way they know how to hunt and how they, you know, truly even learn to enjoy hunting. And a lot of people would say, oh, that's a good thing. We have less hunters in the woods. And I get that as well. But I think Lindsey Thomas talked about this a little bit on Monday's episode, the whole idea of having a big enough voice when it comes to legislation and everything, that hunters are still somewhat, you know, still relevant in this space from a just a management tool, is important as well. So it's a fine line there. But yeah, corn's a interesting application, because there's some guys I've seen, like on Facebook, trying to get in a hunt club, and they're looking for a club that's not a Westervelt club where they can actually bait.
Yeah.
Like, actually put in, like, looking to join a club in XYZ County, not Westervelt, you know, place that allows baiting and so on. The problem I think you have that you run in on, like, hunting clubs or big leases where you have multiple people out there hunting and baiting is you disperse the baiting so much over the whole place that it then is kind of shooting everybody in the foot, and it's not necessarily a tool, it's like a crutch in that standpoint. Like, you can only kill a deer on corn or on bait. So what about you, hot take?
No, I mean, I pretty much agree with you need to push back, bro.
Put something else.
I mean, I we're on the same page. I don't know. Like, yeah, if it's what you rely on and you're not building woodsmanship skills, I feel like you're just missing out. I mean, if that's what you want to do and it's legal, then it's legal. Go do it if that's what you like. But yeah, I think that you're missing out when you do that. There's people that would argue till they're blue in the face about that, because there are guys out there who kill really big deer on bait and they're doing something different than what most other people are doing. We've tried to interview some people who are like that in the past, and it just hasn't worked out because there wasn't that much to it.
Yep.
There's one guy that we interviewed in particular where we did the whole interview and never aired it because we just didn't think it was good. We were like, he's killing all these giant deer on corn. He's doing something different than everyone else. And it's like, all he did was he went and poured corn out, waited till he had a good deer on camera, and then he just went and hunted it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much all there was to it. And it was like an hour of us trying to get something else out of it. He's like, no, that's it. So I'm like, oh, okay. But anyways, yeah, I mean, I don't have a ton to add. Sorry.
All right. So I'll let you get Ben's hot
take. All right. Ben Joyner says, hot take. Hunting flatland swamps, such as a certain WMA that I won't name, is harder than hunting areas with more defined terrain features. I agree, for me, 100%. Personally. I definitely agree.
100%.
Give me some terrain.
Yeah.
Iowa last year, perfect example.
He expands, saying this is due to the overgrown thick areas in such WMAs and the Wildlife Management Office not prioritizing wildlife, but instead spinning cuts. I agree. A lot of, especially when you get in the deep south, some of these like flatland, public land tracks, or even private land, where there's abundant, especially if it's pine forest, maybe they've done a little bit of thinning, but there's so much, like I saw this in Florida, when Winter County, Florida, there's so much thick cover that, first off, visually seeing the deer is tough. Second off, what pattern are you trying to figure out when everything, like, legitimately is quality bedding? I say quality, just abundantly thick cover where they can hide and even move around and you can't physically see the animal.
Yeah.
Let alone hear the animal. That is super tough. Super tough. I mean, we've done a little bit of that. And when we interview guys from down, like, in those areas, that's part of, like, that, like, a lot of those guys that lived in that environment, they're so used to it. It's like, oh, yeah, this is how we hunt. Mm-hmm. But if you drop somebody from a different terrain type, maybe, like, just rolling hills into that kind of cover type in flatland,
yeah,
it's tough. Because, first off, when you look at an aerial map, you're 100% relying solely on aerial imagery and trying to find some kind of habitat diversity. But if you don't have a lot of visible habitat diversity, it is truly... Again, nothing wrong with it, but, like, again, truly boots on the ground and trying to figure out what is different. If it all looks the same, that is very tough. Like, you got to have some diversity and some differences in different areas and in order to try to find those hot spots you might have an opportunity at.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
One thing we talk about with almost every guest on this show is map scouting. My favorite map scouting tool is LiDAR. If you're unfamiliar, LiDAR is basically like a 3D scan of the Earth's surface. I like to say it kind of takes away all the surprises. LiDAR is now available on OnX Hunt on their topography map. If you go to your app right now, click on the topography map, you can flip on that LiDAR feature and boom, it's gonna come on and you're gonna see what I'm talking about. The LiDAR is gonna allow you to see things that are normally hidden from view. This might be ditches, bends in creeks, rocks, old roadbeds. I personally love old roadbeds because deer like to walk them. They're great places to find scrapes. They're great camera locations. And you know, before, an old roadbed or an old logging road might be something that you kind of happen upon while you're out scouting or hunting. Well, now with the LiDAR, before I go into an area, I can turn on that LiDAR and I can see exactly where those roadbeds are. Even old logging roads from the 1930s, you can still see them on there. So that allows me to go straight to those spots and check them out. It's just an incredibly helpful tool, and it's available now on OnX Hunt. And hey, if you want to get 20% off your OnX Elite membership, you can use the promo code Southern. Like I said, it's going to save you 20%. Go check out that LiDAR feature. You'll be glad you did. Know where you stand with OnX Hunt.
If you're traveling to hunt this fall, you need to check out Outdoorsy. Outdoorsy is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the U.S., making it easy for anyone to rent an RV or a camper without owning one. I'm going to be honest with you guys, I wish I knew about this sooner. There's been a couple hunts over these last few years where, you know, depending on where you're going to hunt, there might not be good hotel options, there might not be good rental house options. So, I mean, this is perfect for the traveling hunter. They've got thousands of RVs and campers nationwide, available right in your neighborhood. You got multiple ways that you can travel. You can drive it yourself, you can tow it, or you can have it delivered and fully set up at your destination. Outdoorsy also has built-in peace of mind. They've got comprehensive insurance, 24/7 customer support, and roadside assistance included. So not only is this a good option to give you a good place to stay even when you're going somewhere pretty remote to go hunting, but it's also often more affordable than hotels, especially if you got a good group of guys going with you. So how it works is you just search and choose an RV that fits your trip and your group size, you book it with confidence, and then you hit the road, whether you're driving, towing, or getting it delivered. And right now, listeners of the Southern Outdoorsman podcast can have all service fees removed from their booking in 2026 with show code OUTDOORSMAN at outdoorsy.com. That's OUTDOORSY.com and use the code OUTDOORSMAN at checkout to remove all service fees. Iowa, again, last year's great example for me personally, because there were some hills, there were some flat land that we could hunt, and I started out in the hills and was having a really good hunt. Had a lot of deer in bow range. Y'all are seeing bigger deer in the bottoms, so we switched over to the bottoms. And I saw bigger deer, but none of them ever got in bow range. Like, I just could not figure out how to get the deer to walk by in bow range.
Yeah.
Down in the flatland stuff.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the thing about terrain, the reason I like terrain so much is because I'm not going to say that it forces movement, but it greatly encourages movement in very specific ways. Like, they're gonna navigate steep slopes in a certain way, and they're going to go up over hills in a certain way. Kind of like... like when we squirrel hunted last year with Dempsey, and we were hunting some flat land, just big flat hardwoods, basically chasing squirrel dogs around. If you go look at my OnX track from that, it looks like spaghetti noodles. Like, we were all over the place. You can just ping pong around. If you go to hill country, if you go lay down a bunch of OnX tracks in hill country over and over again, scouting an area, you'll notice that there's very specific ways that you navigate the landscape, and the deer are really no different, because you're going to take a draw to get to the top of the hill rather than climbing the steep face, you know, or you're going to go up through a saddle so you don't have to climb an extra 50 feet to go over the very tip top of the ridge. Like, you'll just notice that even with people walking around the landscape, you're going to use the same exact terrain features that a lot of times the deer use if you're trying to take the path of least resistance. And in flatland, you just don't have that, like, at all. I mean, you might have like a big bend in a creek with a cut bank where maybe they have to walk around it if they happen to drift close to it. But then you're more reliant on habitat edges and things like that, which they definitely use in flatland. But it's way less. I haven't figured it out. I guess that's a long way of saying I just have not figured it out at all.
No, we just hunt that stuff very often. Also, I was going to mention the one thing flatland has going for it, at least with leaf off conditions, is a little bit more predictability of wind, like the wind itself and wind direction.
Yeah.
Now, leaf on conditions, vegetation height, thickness of vegetation can definitely make swirling winds. But with leaf off conditions, I feel like you're going to have a lot more consistent wins down there. I know some guys probably fight over that in the comments. I'm not talking necessarily during postseason, but a little bit later on, I feel like you're going to have a little bit more straight line wins.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Next, we got buddy Clay Harper. Hot take. Everyone likes to say they're after, in quotes, mature bucks, but we all know antlers are the real trophy. Take it from a guy that's killed double-digit five-plus-year-old deer that wouldn't break 120. Nobody's going to go to Iowa or Kansas hoping to kill a seven-year-old five-point. Saying he's a mature buck or what an old warrior is just a consolation prize when you didn't kill one with big antlers. Are they harder to kill than... Well, are they harder to kill than the older?
When they're older.
Oh, gosh. Are they harder to kill when they're older? Need some more caffeine. Probably. Getting one...
You can do it!
Probably... I get more and more dyslexic the tireder I get. It's a... Yeah. Probably getting one something you can feel proud of.
I think you're combining two sentences. He forgot to put a period.
Okay. Anyways, let's be honest. We all want to kill big racks, even if they're 3-year-olds. Okay. I would say okay. The gist is, people are more after trying to kill, want to kill a big rack deer, and just saying it's a mature deer is kind of like a cop out necessarily, or like, for whatever it is. Dude, I'm losing it right now. I think that's definitely a case for probably a decent amount of hunters. I think it's such an individual basis, but I'd say that's probably fairly right. If you're out of state hunting or you're hunting public land and just you had two bucks in front of you, you had a 3-year-old, I'm going to say another state, maybe not Alabama, somewhere in the Midwest. You had a 3-year-old that was 160 inches, and then you had what looked to be a 5-plus-year-old big body, sway back, pot belly, but it's 125 or 130. 10 out of 10 people typically are going to kill or try to shoot that 3-year-old. Okay.
Yep.
And I think that's the case in a lot of places. Big antler deer at a young age gets them killed more than anything. Like Scott Seals used to always say, tall tines get a buck killed.
Yes.
And that's so true. That is so true. So I think that's definitely the case in a lot of applications, a lot of people.
I would say the exception to this is people who are managing for older age class deer, and they're really, really into the management side of it. Because, we know people who pass really large bucks because they're young. That's generally because they can control, if not a large property, a really good property in a really good neighborhood, and they are specifically trying to manage for older age class deer. But they're doing that, generally speaking, because the bucks are not expressing their full antler potential. Different people say different things. Some people say 4.5 to 5.5. Some people say 7 is like their full, their cutoff or whatever. So there are exceptions, but yeah, I think he's totally right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got a question from Bryce Harden. He said, if everyone that bought a license in a state filled every tag and no one poached, how badly would it impact the herd? Probably too many hypothetical factors to entertain that. If everyone that bought a license in a state filled every tag and no one poached, how badly would it impact the herd? I actually think I heard somebody, I went to a talk one time, it might have been Craig Harper at the NWTF convention, talking about this exact subject, where bag limits are set with some kind of assumption of what the actual harvest rate is going to be. So in Alabama, if we get 4 turkeys per year or 3 bucks per year, There's a very small percentage of people who actually fill all of those tags per year, especially on the turkeys. Most people, if they kill one, they'll kill one.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with deer. I don't know exactly how that works out percentages with deer, but generally that's how it's speaking. So, like if everyone filled every tag, yeah, that'd probably be pretty bad. But that's not how it works. And the COVID year was a good test of that for turkey hunting. because in a lot of states in 2020, when everyone was out of work and out of school for COVID, you saw turkey harvest numbers go way up. I mean, mine went up that year. That was my last semester of college, and I had a great year. I had a really good turkey season because I could hunt every day. But yeah, that's an interesting thought, but that's kind of how bag limits are set for that reason. And he had another question. If you had to fight one aggressive two-year-old buck per five-minute round slash wave, one-minute rest period between rounds on a half-an-acre food plot with any knife of your choice, how many rounds slash bucks would you last? So it's like a UFC fight, but with deer?
Until the death.
Dude, I don't know. Deer are really, really, really strong. So I don't know how long you'd last. If they were like really trying to get you and not run away, dude, I don't know if you'd last that long. I would be honest. What do you think?
Oh, no, that was such a left field question. I appreciate it, Bryce, but I have no idea. I'd love for people in the comments to leave a thought of how many rounds and bucks they'd be able to.
Per 5 minutes. So every round, another two-year-old buck. Mm-hmm. So if you don't get him in the round, you got to fight two the next round. Yeah, dude, I'd say probably within four rounds, you're probably done.
You better be quick on it.
You're probably done.
Be quick on it.
You're going to get impaled.
But the whole thing about if everybody filled their tags and no one poached, how badly would it impact the herd, I have no idea. Because, I mean, you could probably pull the data for different states that track hunting license really well. I say that because some do a lot better jobs than others. And count up all the tags and then look at the overall harvest percentage, or not percentage, but like overall harvest number average for like the last 5 years. And I bet you it doesn't come out to at the most one deer per person, if I had to guess.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, so, yeah, I don't know what that would look like. Need some more does getting shot. But,
yeah, yeah.
All right. Mike Springstead. Question, in river bottom flooded plain habitat, it is very difficult to see the slight changes in terrain when using LIDAR. What significant or what slight features are best to look for to find possible funnels?
So this is a really, really good question. LIDAR is the best thing since sliced bread because it lets you see all the little ditches and intricacies. It takes the trees away. It's like looking at a scan of the moon if you haven't seen LIDAR before. So you see what the terrain truly looks like, especially really high resolution LIDAR. It's awesome. I used to make custom LIDAR maps for people, and most of the people I made those for were in Louisiana and Arkansas and Mississippi and some in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And it was mostly the flatland guys that really, really liked LIDAR a lot of the people that I worked with were specifically getting the LIDAR map for. This is before LIDAR was like readily available on hunting apps.
Mm-hmm.
What they specifically wanted the LIDAR for was looking for little ridges that run through the swamps. And when I say ridge, I mean like 2 to 5 feet higher than everything else around it. And so if you can pick up on those little tiny ridges, that's what a lot of people I've talked to who hunt those year in, year out, that's what they're looking for. And the reasons are, is because of one, flooding, that's going to be out of the water in the flooding. Two, your habitat's going to be a little bit different up there. So you'll have maybe briars up there, a little bit higher ground. You might have different species of oak trees
mm-hmm.
that grow on those ridges. There's just going to be, it might be really subtle, but there might be some kind of habitat change on those high spots. And especially if you're in like a delta riverine type habitat where you've got old oxbows or just anywhere in the Mississippi Delta where it used to flood. As long as it hasn't been, you know, at one point it wasn't just totally plowed over and all those little ridges erased and flattened out, you can see on the LIDAR where at some point that area flooded or the river used to run through there, and they'll just be like bands of little high spots. Like if you look at a color-coded LIDAR, where it like the lower elevation is a different color, it's like a color gradient where like a low might be a green color or a blue color, and then the high spots are like a yellow or a red color. They really pop out, and what you'll see is like little ridges that all run kind of in a line. It looks like waves in the ocean almost. and that's deposits from where water used to flow through there. And so that's why you have a little bit of a terrain change and you have a habitat difference. So that is one thing you can look for. Another thing you can look for is just little ditches that run through the woods, little creeks, and what those creeks do, because those creeks will wind around and snake around. And you can look at where a creek maybe makes a really hard bend, and usually where there's a hard bend in a creek, there'll be a high bank right there, and that'll show up really well on LIDAR. We've talked to guys who kind of key in on those things. But those are a couple things you can look for that are subtle that can be very useful in flat habitat. You got anything else?
It's not necessarily subtle, but just water, like water chain, like sloughs, oxbows, stuff like that. Yes, a deer can swim. Yes, a deer will go through water. But having some deep water can definitely funnel some deer, beaver dams, and so on, and that kind of habitat. But I think you hit the nail on the head. Next, we got Matt Denny.
Also, there's some really good replies on that. Uh-huh. So if anybody's on the circle, all these questions and hot takes have a bunch of replies, and I'm looking at that one for the LIDAR, and there are some all kinds of map screenshots and just really good examples of kind of what we're talking about in there.
Yep.
So if y'all are on the circle, go check it out.
Matt Denny, he's got a hot take. So it's definitely a hot take if you ask my family members who don't start hunting Alabama until the January rut. But if you have a buck on camera in Alabama, the best time to kill him the entire year is the first week of bow season. If you can figure out their bed to feed route, it's a done deal. They aren't even slightly thinking about does that time of year. The rut is still 3 months away, and if you're doing your job, they should be completely unpressured as well at that point.
I kind of agree with that. The only caveat I would say is it doesn't necessarily have to be the first week of bow season. It depends on how much pressure. It 100% just depends on how much pressure they're getting. Mm-hmm. And my example of this is the buck I missed with my recurve bow last year and then ended up shooting with my rifle a couple weeks later.
A couple weeks?
No, what week did I shoot at him with my bow? It was when you were in Arkansas.
October.
It was late October.
Killed him in December.
Okay, yeah. All right, so yeah, month and a half later. But it wasn't opening week, though. It was at the very end of October, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure. So we'd had a couple weeks. There were some guys hunting out there, but nobody else had hunted that bottom except me. Mm-hmm. And I think it was my third sit where he walked by me, and I got a shot at him. And I did not capitalize, but he stayed in there, and really nobody else was hunting that particular little area that I was hunting. And so I only went in on really good days when I thought I could get in and out really clean. Missed him. He didn't really know what happened. And then I continued to stay out of there, and then I kind of laid off that area completely. And then the very first time I went in there in rifle season, I got him. So yeah, I agree. But it depends on if you control your property, it doesn't have to be the first week. And the only reason I say that is because if the conditions don't line up well on the first week, don't think that you have to go in there and hunt him, especially if you've got a little area to yourself, no one else is really pressuring it, or if you have your own property and you know that nobody else is out there and has access to it. Don't hunt a subpar day. Don't try to thread the needle if you don't have to. Just wait till the conditions are right and then go in there and get him. So,
okay.
All right. This is from Justin West.
Oh, you skipping?
Wait. Oh, sorry, Sam. Almost skipped old Sam.
Yeah.
All right. Sam Brown. Hot take. It's easier to kill one specific deer off food in the early or late season than it is to kill any random mature buck during the rut, hunting a terrain feature and or community scrape. It is easier to kill one specific deer off food than to kill any random mature buck. I don't know if I agree with that. Any random mature buck? You don't think so? I don't know, Sam. I don't know.
But then again, Sam's in Maryland. I don't know when their gun season. I'm taking gun hunting into the equation. Bow hunting, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if I agree with it.
I definitely
would. But that's what makes it a hot take, because it's like, you don't have to necessarily agree with it.
I definitely don't agree with it, actually. The more I think about it, the less I agree with it, Sam. Well, especially if you're good at hunting early season and you like hunting early season, mm-hmm. and you know what you're doing, then maybe. Yeah. If you got a deer pattern. But for your average guy who's maybe still trying to learn, or they save their vacation days for the rut and they don't hunt that much. I don't know. I just don't know. It's pretty tough, especially down here. I mean, it's hard to get on them early season. It's pretty tough.
Yep.
All right.
Justin West, hot take. Listening to Lindsey Thomas speak about hogs encouraged me to say this. On pressured public land, you will find your mature bucks where you find the large group of hogs. I know a lot of people will disagree with me, but here's my case. Think of what I said. Hogs, number one, hogs will not put up with human pressure. Number two, hogs have a great ability to find the best and most preferred food sources. Number three, hogs scare off most of the deer. The same can be said about mature bucks. Mature bucks won't put up with any hunting pressure. They find the best food and they protect it from other deer. They don't like being around a lot of other deer. I killed my first really mature public land buck in an area covered in hog sign because I was trying to shoot a hog. I have shot most of my Florida registry class bucks near hogs. I shot one a couple years ago with two hogs under my tree. I have done the same thing on public land in Georgia and Alabama. Keep in mind, I'm referring to public land, not private, with feeders. Hogs will absolutely run deer off feeders. Obviously, it would be best if there were no hogs, but if you have them already, they will be in the same place as mature bucks. And I had actually a couple people on here agreeing with that.
Man, that's an interesting take. I mean, that kind of makes sense. I have no experience with this whatsoever, so I cannot confirm or deny, but it makes sense, especially based on what Lindsey Thomas was saying.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I don't have a lot of experience hunting around hogs. I mean, I've had a little bit of experience, but nothing worth noting. So, I mean, if that's something that he sees down there in Florida a whole bunch and also done the same in Alabama and in Georgia, I mean, it's an interesting perspective.
So, yeah.
I don't know.
All right, next up we got Scott Dowdy. Question, what is a wind vortex? Are the bucks walking in these certain winds? Are rub lines in these areas? ... Am I a little lost? Or I am a little lost. A wind vortex. I'm assuming that would be like a thermal hub type deal. Swirling winds is basically what that is. Are the bucks walking these in certain winds? I don't know.
I'm trying to think of the application. We've done so many episodes.
You'll talk to some guys who will say that where the wind is coming over the ridge, like if you had an east-west running ridge, north-south wind coming from the north, that the wind is hitting the north face of that ridge and it's riding over that ridge like water. And then right on the other, on the south slope, it'll like eddy right there, just like in a creek. And that being like a wind vortex, and people will say that bucks will run that vortex so they can scent more effectively. I don't know if that's really the case or not. It makes sense. That's one of those things where people start applying human logic to it, I feel like, and it makes sense to us, but I don't think that a deer really thinks about things like that. Like, I don't know.
I mean, I'll say this. If you find a lot of swirling winds in a certain spot, I feel like a lot of times, now this is, I'm thinking hill country, like steep hill country. Typically, is a place you're going to find scrapes if there's good ground for scrapes, like a big scrape. I mean, that spot you'd hunted one time where you end up killing that deer, it's kind of like that. I mean, that wind was kind of finicky in that area.
Yes, it was.
And a ton of buck sign in that general area. I don't know if it was necessarily the reason why the sign was there. I think the habitat was pretty good, and also like the terrain features were pretty
I think
good.
The habitat and terrain's why the sign was there.
Yeah, but I mean, that's where I kind of comes back to, like, the whole, like, wind vortex, or I'm just going to say swirling winds for this application, if that has any kind of effect. I don't think so. But also, I feel like if you go down that rabbit hole, if you have confidence, and again, he said he's a little lost, I would say forget about that if you're a little lost with that. Like, don't worry about that aspect mm-hmm. of it. Worry about the terrain, worry about the habitat, and worry about sign associating between habitat and terrain, and you'll do a lot better.
Yeah. Like, the way that I always think about it is that the deer are like dogs. They learn through conditioning and association. They don't think about things like we do. They don't think through logic. So, like, if there's some thermal hub or a bowl where the wind always swirls and it's surrounded by good cover, and that buck during the rut, he's been going down there for 3 years in a row, and every time he goes to that spot, he smells a hot doe during that time of year, then he'll be like, oh man, I like that spot. And so, like, he'll keep coming back to it. It's not like he's like, okay, that thermal hub was good, and in these bowls, the wind swirls, so I need to go check that one over there and this one over there and that one. I don't think that, they don't think like that, is what I'm saying. They just respond to stimulus. So, like, I don't think that they're logically thinking, I need to get in the wind tunnel, and I need to run that. I think that it's I think you're way better off just putting the terrain and habitat front of mind rather than that kind of stuff.
Yeah. This is from Andrew Longy. Andrew, his question is, what's y'all's opinion on cell cameras being banned from public lands? Several Western states have already have and have strict regulations on cell trail cameras. Will other states follow suit or find a way to make money on it with a tag or permit for cameras? We've talked to some people about that, kind of in the trail cam space, and I definitely think in certain areas like Kansas outlawed all trail cameras, not just cell cameras, on public lands 3, 4, 5 years ago. And Iowa's been trying to do it for 2 years in a row or 3 years in a row, and they're trying to figure that out. I think it's possible in very popular states for non-resident pressure,
yeah,
or non-residents to go and hunt. I think it could be a circumstance. Missouri already has it illegal on. I can't remember. I say illegal. They don't allow. I can't remember if it's cell cameras or all cameras, trail cameras, on certain, if not all, conservation areas.
Yeah.
They've had that for, like, a long time. I don't know how many people abide by that, but I've read that in the rule book. So, I don't know. I feel like it could become a lot more popular in certain areas. Again, it's states where you have an influx of hunters, and partly the issue that I've seen of why they're doing it is hunter conflict.
Yep.
People trying to claim areas because they put cameras on it, arguments starting, people harassing other people's cameras, people harassing people that are trying to hunt the same general area that someone has a big buck on camera and they're going in and harassing that hunter. That kind of issue is where I think a lot of that's kind of happening. That was like the big issue for out west, you know, having on, I think it was Arizona, on watering holes.
There'd be 10 trail cameras on the same.
Or 20, 30, yeah, a bunch of cameras on the same hole. And people getting in arguments and fighting over spots and trying to kill specific animals. So, I feel like that could be definitely, that probably will be trying to get expanded upon with a handful of other states. I don't think it's going to be nationwide because there's some states I don't think it's as big of an issue, but
yeah,
I think it's a realistic possibility for some states.
Yeah, and I agree. And really all it takes is a lot of states have some kind of public input. Like here in Alabama, we've got the Conservation Advisory Board, and you can go up there and you can yell at the people that make our game laws. And we've both been to some of those meetings, and that is exactly what people do. They show up to, we have two a year, people show up to it, and either a lot of them politely state their case. Some people get up there and just browbeat the board members over certain things. So if there's like some residents that are experiencing some pretty bad issues and they're persistent about it, you could see laws changed on that in a lot of states. And I think we're already seeing that happening. Just goes back to, you know, if you're hunting public land, don't be a turd to everybody, you know, be polite, be nice. And don't make it a bad experience for everybody that you run into. All right. Next up, we got Dan Austin. Hot take. On a small private parcel, limit your feeding and minerals to one destination, preferably in a strategic spot in the center of your property. This helps manipulate the deer to move in a desired location. You can put stands at certain terrain features or on edges that will funnel them along the way. I don't know if that's too much of a hot take, but I kind of agree with it. I mean, if you're going to do that kind of thing, then yeah, put it in a spot where you have all the advantages. And, you know, we got an episode coming up about food plots, and, you know, we talked food plots, and we're kind of interested in putting some small food plots on our club. adding some little like kill plot kind of deals. And I've been looking at the map a little bit, trying to figure out where'd be a good place to put it, and or really put them. I'd like to do a couple of them. And the problem that I've run into looking at the map is I'm struggling finding spots where it makes sense to put something like a little kill plot, little third of an acre food plot or a quarter acre food plot, where it makes sense for me to actually go and hunt it, because it's just not in a great location either, where I feel like deer are going to be bedding close to it during daylight, or in a location where I can actually get back and forth to it. What do you have?
I'm enjoying this next question. I was skimming ahead, sorry.
Okay.
On questions.
That's pretty much all I got on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just common sense. I don't think it's that hot to take. I think it's good management practice. If you're gonna run minerals, if you're going to run bait or any kind of feed on a property, on a small acreage, and I say small, probably 50 acres or less.
Yeah.
Centrally located, it'd probably be a lot more efficient for you and effective. Especially like you start talking about 10, 20 acre parcels. Yeah, one spot, centrally located. You get good access around the border, the perimeter of it. You can kind of come in from, you know, a couple ways.
Yep.
And not necessarily hunt the feed, but like that's one of the path. Like that's like a big draw, especially if you can't run, you don't have equipment or open ground to put a food plot in. I think that's a good take. This is what I was joking about, because this is up your alley. This is Matthew Leopard, and he's got a hot take. Since we like to argue about what's really the South, I'd like to get more into the weeds. North Alabama is only the counties that border the Tennessee River, maybe with an exception for Franklin County. Then you have North Central and South Central Alabama, with Birmingham being the divider. By the time you get to Montgomery, you're definitely in South Alabama. Born and raised in Limestone County here, so everyone understands my biases. Now I'm just across the state line in Tennessee. But I find that quite funny, actually.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
Yeah.
I pretty much agree with that. Once you get south of Montgomery, everything is a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Habitat's different. Terrain's way different. You could get a little more scientific with it and say that, you know, you got the coastal plain where the Black Belt comes down. You got the fall line, you know, runs through the middle of the state. Mm-hmm. And everything, once you get below that fall line, everything's sandy for the most part. Not everything's sandy, but like if you were to go float rivers that go across the fall line, on the north side of the fall line, they're rocky, ridge and valley, bedrock exposed. Once you get south of the fall line, there's none of that. It's sandy. You got sandbars on the river. If you're north of the fall line, you don't usually have sandbars on rivers. You have some, but not like south of the fall line.
Mm-hmm. Way to nerd out for us. Appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I think
I got to add something.
I just find it humorous. I was like, that's good. I don't know if it's a hot take. I mean, I guess it is kind of a hot take. Some people would find great offense to that. Alabama folks, but I'll let you get Cage.
All right. Well, I think Cage is just agreeing with him.
Oh.
All right. Eric Escobel Jr. Hot take. You're out hunting and a healthy 3.5-year-old buck steps out. He's got great antlers, good body mass, and is definitely a shooter. Do you take him or do you let him walk and hope he makes it a couple years to reach his full potential, even though there's no guarantee the neighbors won't harvest him or that you'll ever see him again? Curious to hear everyone's thoughts. What's your decision and why?
Josh, in the first comment, I'm blasting.
I started blasting.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh, that's so funny.
That just depends, man. It just depends on your personal preference.
Depends on personal preference, your goals. It depends on, for me, how many buck tags do I have? What state am I in? Public versus private. Is it private that I got invited to? And they have specific goals? You know, probably not.
Uh-huh.
You know? There's a lot of things that go into it. But I think it just depends on the time of the year. I mean, I've talked about that. There's after we did our first interview with Scott Seals and Nick Harris, Scott was talking about, like, you know, if you shoot that first buck that comes out, the first good buck comes out, you won't ever see, like, a lot of times the better buck. Talking about, like, rut hunting.
Yep.
Travel corridors. And literally, I think it was the next day or that weekend, we did a gun hunt, and I passed, like, the best buck at that time I'd ever passed in Alabama. Really nice. Well, I thought it was a 3-year-old 8-point. and he come walking all the way up to 60 yards and it's clear cut in front of me. I mean, I watched for a long time. He came all the way up, milled around, and then it kind of eased on out. Yeah, I took a video and sent it to you and Scott, and I was like, passed him. And there's just one of those things, like, I've killed enough of that kind of deer, like, just a really nice 8-point, like, nice Alabama deer, like, probably, I say 100, 105-inch 8-point.
Yep.
It's like, at that moment, at that point of the season, I was like, I'm fine not killing that. There's also years you have a terrible year.
And since then, you've killed deer smaller than that. It just depends on the day.
Oh, yeah, it depends on the day. Yeah, exactly.
I'm the same exact way.
So, I don't know. And also, it's not even a hot take. It's more of a question. He says hot take. But anyways, I think it just depends.
Yeah, I agree. It depends on who else is hunting the land, what your goals are. So, like, on the club, if we had a really good 3.5, if we had this buck that he's describing on the club this year, and we talked to, like, our group, all of us that kind of know each other and
yeah, my interest in shooting on the club.
Yeah, if we all talk to him and everyone's like, yeah, he meets the restrictions, but we're going to pass him, and I've got all the people who I think would probably end up killing that deer on board, then I'd be like, okay, yeah, I'll pass him. If I'm on some public ground and that deer steps out, I'm probably going to shoot it.
It just depends. Like, are you going to be happy taking the deer or not?
Yeah, exactly.
If you're happy, take it. If you're not happy, don't shoot it. As Lindsey Thomas said, trigger discipline. And that's a great way to manage. So
that's right. That's right. All right, I think that's all we got. You got a whole bunch of responses on here to all those. So a lot going on in the comment section on the circle.
Yep, absolutely. All right, let's see. I'm trying to think what else has popped up.
Well, we just wrapped up a trip. We went to Georgia and South Carolina, got a whole bunch of interviews in the bag. Y'all are going to love them. Every one of them's a banger. Had a great time recording. But yeah, we got a couple more podcast trips coming up. We got the World Deer Expo coming up, which I'm excited about. Going to have a booth
17th,
there.
18th, and or no, July 17th, 18th, and 19th, World Deer Expo, Birmingham, Alabama. We're going to have a booth there. We're on the same row we've been on for the last 2 years, but just down a couple more booths. We got a bigger booth for this year, so we have more room so you guys can come hang out, check out some apparel. We got some cool stuff working. Is it going to be ready?
I think it is.
I hope
right,
so.
We're trying. If it's not going to be ready by that, it's definitely going to be ready by Mobile Hunter Expo.
Okay. Well, we got Mobile Hunter Expo as well coming up, but World Deer Expo is going to be super fun. Look forward to seeing a lot of you guys. We've actually been talking about that a good bit on the Circle community. And a lot of guys are talking about trying to make up for that World Deer Expo. Because the World Deer Expo, I think, I would say almost regionally, you know, you're talking Alabama, Mississippi. Like, Mississippi's got this wildlife extravaganza, and I think they got another show or two over there. But World Deer Expo is just a huge show. A lot of really good brands are there. And it's a great show that you can spend a ton of hours. I mean, it is giant, giant expo. And like anything, you got a little bit of filler boost, but it's not terrible. So there's a lot of stuff that you can actually be pretty efficient going to and checking stuff out and actually see stuff that you might be interested in actually purchasing.
Yep.
But it's a fun time and super family friendly. So we got that coming up, which, yeah, that's be here in like 2.5 weeks.
Yep.
By the time we'll be doing that. Then Mobile Hunter Expo in August. I think it's 14th, 15th, and 16th in Dalton, Georgia. Talking to a lot of people about that as well. We just got done with our Revive Outdoor live event and talked to a lot of guys about the Mobile Hunter Expo at that. They're kind of curious as well. Kind of like not only trying before you buy, you know, a bunch of different equipment that you can't typically find at retailers, or if you can, you still can't try it. It's like you got to purchase it, take it home, and hope you like it. But also just meeting a lot of very well-rounded and great deer hunters from the Southeast. And a ton of past podcast guests are at that show. So that's going to be super fun as well.
It's going to be a good time. It's going to be a real good time.
And then
good place to go try out gear. By the way, on that, Latitude just released a whole bunch of new stuff. So they got their...
I forgot to bring that over today. I was going to bring it over.
Yeah, I got all my stuff.
You have it here?
No.
I was going to bring it here and do a little show and tell, bro.
Yeah, we'll have to do that next week.
That practice pack is sick.
Yes. I was like, finally, someone made what I've been wanting all these years.
Yeah.
And basically what it is, it's a very compact, lightweight frame pack. So you can pack a deer out on it. You can pack all your gear on it. It's going to be a... And it's not... I've been using a Kefaru pack for years. Kefaru I bought it years ago. It was very expensive. Great pack. It's way overkill for Alabama. I still like it for certain hunts. Like if you have to haul like 100 pounds of stuff out of the woods, dead deer plus all your gear or whatever the case may be, it's awesome. But it's really expensive. It's gigantic. It's hot to carry around because it's like a big solid back piece. And it's just overkill. And that Praxis pack is slick. Mm-hmm. So I've been messing around with it a little bit. It's made for whitetail hunting. And the flyer pack, more of a minimalist. I really like that thing too, customizable. So I'm pretty pumped to try that stuff out, mm-hmm. man. We're going to have to do some videos on that
stuff.
And
the Synergy sticks.
Yeah, kind of how we pack our gear on there. The Synergy sticks, super, just stupid light. And they come in a 4-pack. I was like, heck yeah, coming in a 4-pack.
Yeah.
We need 4 sticks in the South, guys. We've been telling them that.
Yeah, a lot of applications. That or just run some double step aiders. But yeah, super excited. So yeah, just had that launch. So if you can't get your hands on any of those products that we talked about, the flyer pack, Praxis pack, Synergy sticks, and so on, along with a bunch of new pouches they came out with, Mobile Hunter Expo is a phenomenal place to go and try a lot of that stuff out and go see it for yourself,
mm-hmm.
and then purchase. Try before you buy. I always tell guys this, because we get a lot of people ask us about different products. I'm like, listen, you need to try. It's like boots. Everything fits a little bit different. And like, that's the cool thing. Like with Latitude, they have so many different saddles. What I like is not necessarily what you like.
Yep.
That like fits you. And that's the cool thing about having a lot of different models you can try from. Problem is if you're buying and you're taking it on someone's word, it may work for you, may not. And that's the cool thing about going and actually be able to try a lot of stuff at the expo and have somebody who's experienced actually showing you how to use it and how to get it set up. So you have the both balance of comfort, but also functionality. And that just, it makes it so simple and easy. But all those new products are going to be at the show, which I'm thrilled about. Super excited to use that. And also, I mean, we won't say the state, but we finally figured out where we're hunting this fall.
Oh, yeah. Now that we've changed it 6 times.
Yeah, that's all good.
Now we figured it out. We'll talk more about it later.
Yeah, we jumped through 3 different states of like where we're going in November.
Yep.
And finally landed on one. So anyway, feel pretty good about it.
I feel real good about it. I feel really good. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Well, all right. You got anything else?
No, I'm just mentally fried. So appreciate everybody. I'm going to have to freshen up. I'm going to have to drink. I'm going to have to consume.
We're gonna start a GoFundMe so we can just stock up a bunch of energy drinks here.
I'm trying to cut out caffeine. That's what I was doing. Like,
oh,
yeah.
You're weaning off.
Yeah.
Okay. Everyone encouraged
it. It's been great. It's like day 3 or 4, 5, I don't know, 4 or something like that. It was when we get back from the trip. I was like, or actually it was on the trip. No, I still drank some on the trip. It was that.
You limited it though.
Yeah. But on like when we went fishing was starting on that day, I didn't consume any energy drinks. Like my energy drink, and I was like a Diet Coke. Love a Diet Coke. Okay, it's like a little 12-ounce can is like 43 milligrams of caffeine. That is a fraction of what I would consume. That is a tiny fraction of what I consume a day. But anyway, so today's just been for whatever reason a little rougher than the other couple of days. So
good job, Jacob.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to freshen up.
Stay the course.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to freshen up for the Hunters Hangout meeting tonight, but it'll be fun. So, anyways, appreciate everybody watching the podcast. Thank y'all for listening. If y'all enjoy the show, again, haven't been on YouTube for, I guess we dropped a couple episodes this week, a couple videos this week, but appreciate y'all watching the videos. Appreciate y'all commenting. And also, we appreciate when you guys share the podcast with other folks. Now, whether it's the video podcast, the audio platform, or audio episodes, when you send it to somebody, it really helps us out. We love picking up new listeners and having these people that just now found us, message us, asking us questions, writing in questions, and all that kind of stuff, kind of growing the community. So I really appreciate y'all doing that. And appreciate y'all watching the show and appreciate y'all listening. So we'll catch you back here on the next episode of the Southern Outdoorsman. And remember, guys, y'all stay Southern.
All right, y'all go ahead and mark your calendars. Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th. Is the Mobile Hunters Expo in Dalton, Georgia. Y'all have heard us talking about it for years, and it really is. It's the highlight of our summer. We absolutely love that show. We've met so many of you guys at that show over the years, and it is just it's like the perfect environment to go and meet like-minded hunters, hang out, have a good time, and get ready for deer season. So, obviously, as the name implies, it is the place to go and try all of the mobile hunting gear coming out right now.
We always recommend to people, if you're thinking about getting a new stand, a new sticks, a new saddle, go try it before you buy it. The Mobile Hunters Expo lets you try almost all the brands in the mobile hunting space in one spot in one day. There's really nothing like it. So not only do you have all that gear available to you, they also have a great speaker lineup. This year they've got Bobby Worthington, Dylan Harper, Mariah Boggess, Derek Norwood, and BHA all giving presentations where you can go learn from those guys and ask them questions. So if you've heard us talk about the Mobile Hunters Expo for a couple years now and haven't made it out yet, don't let this be another year that you miss it. Y'all come on out. We'll have a great time. We're excited to meet you guys there. We can't wait for it. We'll see y'all there. Again, mark y'all's calendars. It's at the Dalton Convention Center in Dalton, Georgia, Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th. See y'all there. All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck. And I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic. And no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find basher groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com.